This afternoon, I'm at the home of Gary and Kim Shockley. I'm just spending a little time with Gary, just listening to who he is and his dreams and hopes for the church. And it's exciting what the future of St. Andrew United Methodist Church has. And we just hope that through this brief little podcast, you can overhear and allow yourself to get excited about the transition and the future leadership of the church.
Man, I'm so excited to be doing this with you, Dale. And when you suggested this opportunity, I thought, wow, this is right on. So this will be a great dialogue. And I hope it really is a conversation between us that the folks who are listening to this podcast get to kind of step into the stream of things. And I'd love to hear responses. I don't know if people ever respond to podcasts.
Oh, we'd love that.
That would be awesome.
Underneath the page where I post it, they can respond all they want, ask you questions. You can respond back to them.
Great. Okay.
So we could have a conversation, keep the conversation going, actually.
Absolutely. Good.
And thank you for your time, allowing me to come into your home on this beautiful Colorado afternoon and do this with you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Let's get this thing started.
All right. Let's go.
There's a story that I heard that goes a little something like this. One day a rabbi who had lost his way, lost his sense of purpose in the world, went for a walk. And on his walk, he came to a centurion, a guard over the empire. And this centurion said to the rabbi, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" The rabbi responded by saying, "What?" And once again, the guard said, "Who are you and what are you doing here?" The rabbi replied by saying, "How much do they pay you to do this?" And the centurion explained to him how much they paid. And the rabbi offered to pay him double to come to his house to say the words, "Who are you and what are you doing?" for the rest of his life. So, Reverend Gary Shockley, as we sit here, I want to ask you, who are you and what are you doing here?
Man, I love that question. What a great story. Everybody should be challenged with that, huh? Who am I and what am I doing here? You know, I shared with you that on my flight back this last trip, I spent some time working on my own personal vision statement, so it's fresh. I mean, the pencil isn't even dry yet. And without reading the whole thing, just to share with you briefly that I really, who I am is a person of faith who seeks a balanced, centered, and growing life, desiring more than anything else to be faithful to whatever I believe God is calling me to do in the moment. And the values that come out of that in terms of what I do is, you know, to value relationships over tasks, to value integrity over success, to value being over doing, authenticity over ego, family over work, and meandering over drivenness. And my goal, Dale, is to be, and I've said this with folks, I want to lead this large membership church to be that as well. And to be the kind of senior pastor that doesn't trash people in my wake and doesn't allow himself to be trashed in the midst of busy ministry. I think we can do this and be healthy, whole people and model that for the world.
That's outstanding. I wonder if you could tell us a couple of the milestones of your life in ministry from the beginning till this point of beginning as the senior pastor at St. Andrew United Methodist Church.
Yeah, ministry-wise, it started, I was 18 years old when I was appointed to my first church right out of high school. And I was wrestling with a call to ministry, and somebody said, "Do you want to test that?" And like an idiot, I said, "Sure." And so they appointed me to a downtown city church in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and I served there 4 years. Grew an awful lot. I was a young person. I had no idea what ministry was all about. I had never preached, taught a Sunday school class, led a meeting. You know, I got out in the community and knocked on doors, and I just said, "Hey, I pastor this little church over here, and I think it'd be really cool to have you as a part of it."
Wow.
So that created this sense in me that church is all about others, not itself. I've said the church is, I think, one of the only organizations that really does exist for its non-members. And we get that wrong. We get that turned around, and we start thinking people in the community exist for us. So my ministry has always been about focusing that, sharpening that. It led me, after a couple of church experiences when I was in college and seminary, to pastor some established congregations. But before coming to St. Andrew, I had the great opportunity to start two brand new United Methodist churches and to start them with the right kind of thinking about we exist for those who are not yet here. So my milestones have really been about creating new places for new people. And it's been great seeing that work.
It's outstanding. We're talking a lot about at St. Andrew about your spiritual gifts and finding your passion and your purpose and really plugging in, or to really use it a better way, to serving out of who God created you to be. What would you say the gifts that you have been given are?
The spiritual gifts, you know, when you do those spiritual gifts assessment things, come out, leadership has always been my highest. Creativity. You know, I'm an artist, I'm a writer, you know those things about me. So all of ministry for me is a creative opportunity for creative expression and to partner with God in creative ventures. I look at church as a sculpture that we all get to work on together, and it gives glory to God and points other persons to this magnificent God that we serve. So leadership, administration, preaching, creative communication, those are really my highest gifts. But I'm a passionate person. I'm highly relational. I love being with people. I love watching the light bulbs go off in people's minds and hearts when they begin to understand who they are, the wonderful creations of God, and then just kind of support that. And I love that about being in ministry. I really do. Seeing that life transformation is just remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's really just cool.
It's amazing.
It really is. Yeah.
What about, you mentioned your writings as one of the creative ways you have ministered and continue to minister to people. Tell us a little bit about your writing projects and what you've worked on in the past and what you're working on now. And then maybe you could share with us a couple samples of...
Sure. I've always liked creative writing. When I was a kid, I would find myself at home just writing stories, just making stuff up. And my wife would tell you I still like to make stuff up. She often says, you know, the facts get in the way of a good story, so just kind of work around them.
I love that.
That's right. So I love to embellish. And so storytelling has always been important for me. So when I was in college, I would do a lot of writing, and I got a lot of accolades for it, a lot of positive affirmation. But I didn't write anything that was published until 2007, which was my first book, The Meandering Way, Leading by Following the Spirit. And I'll tell you a little bit about that, because it's probably the most important work that I've had that's actually been published. My wife Kim and I wrote a second book together called Imagining Church, Seeing Hope in a World of Change. And it really comes out of our personal vision and experiences in ministry of what we think the church needs to be like for this next generation and beyond. And it needs to look very different than it looks right now. And then a fun little thing that I did is I wrote a novel, because I thought that the real stuff isn't satisfying enough. So let me make up a story, and it's called Eye of the Beholder. And the central character is a father, Nate Hawthorne, who goes through a series of personal crises, and through some mystical kinds of experiences and some serendipitous relationships that come his way, he rediscovers himself. And as a result of it, becomes a whole person. And I'm just now writing the second installment of that series, and it'll take me a long time to get there, but it's a lot of fun.
That's outstanding. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. And I like to blog too. I have a daily blog that I write. Writing to me, I would imagine much the same for you, because I've seen the creative writing you do, is not work. I mean, it takes some intentionality and skill, but it's a fun thing we get to do.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Life-giving for me to put words to paper of dreams, ideas, feelings.
Yeah. Do you often sense kind of like God co-participating in that activity, that it goes beyond you in terms of your own ability as a human being, that there's something else at work?
Absolutely.
That takes it to a different place?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's how it is for me too.
So would you mind sharing with us a few of some excerpts that particularly where you felt that sort of co-participation with God as you wrote those words?
Yeah. The Meandering Way, the first book that I wrote, came out of a personal crisis. It's a very, very personal story, because I had all my life been in ministry and really kind of charged the hill and wanted to make something of myself and the projects that I did. And the first church that I planted tested my mettle as a human being, and I came up wanting seriously. I mean, I trashed every serious relationship, including my relationship with my wife and my kids. I to say I was not the ideal husband would be an understatement. And I got to the point where friends failed me. My mother died in the midst of it. I had a staff that turned on me. Money that I was counting on for the new church fell through. And I found myself in a deep, deep depression. And I went to get counseling help. Found a great psychotherapist and a spiritual director, and for a year did some very intensive work. And out of that came this journaling that I called my meanderings. And out of that came this book. So it's very, it's a little scary when I even read my own stuff and know that other people are reading it because
<bet. laughs>
I'm out there.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that I talk about in the first chapter, I think it's in the first chapter, is looking at Jesus as a model meanderer. And to meander means to take the winding path, not living life in a straight line. You know, I've got to get from here to here as quickly as possible, right? And get it done.
Right.
But meandering is more about stopping and smelling the roses, being willing to take detours, being aware of what's happening around you. And when I look at the life of Jesus, he had great intentionality and purpose. And yet I never sensed in him a person who was driven, you know, to get something done, to get to the next place. I mean, he got criticized for being a lingerer, didn't he? You know, it's like, how come you're not here? How come you're not doing that? And Jesus kind of followed his own pace. And I talk a lot in this book about the life of Jesus and how he modeled that and how out of his meandering way, which is really mostly about pace and focus, watching the pace of your life and the focus of your life, he became so aware of everything around him and the people who were right in front of him. Some of his best stories and metaphors come right out of the fact that he lived life with his eyes and his heart wide open, you know?
That's right.
He was so aware of everything around him. And, you know, when he talks about, look at the birds of the air, they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. And he talks about the lilies of the field. He's constantly pointing to fig trees and rocks and trees and birds and all of those things, intending to lift people's eyes to beyond those physical things, to the presence of God. And so, you know, one of the things I talk about in this book is that I believe it's because of the time that Jesus intentionally spent slowing down his pace and being aware of what he was focusing on and spending time with God, that he was so ably apt to understand the human heart. You know, he could relate to people and their struggles, and he was able to quickly build relationships of trust. And looking at his life, nothing in his meandering day was ever wasted, and everything had incredible purpose. And so for me, you know, and what I found in that teaching of Jesus is that the simplest thing I needed to learn, the most difficult thing that I ever learned, is that the destination of my life is not a place. I'm not heading somewhere, i.e. heaven or whatever that is. That the destination of my place is a person, in the person of God. And that God isn't so much interested in getting me somewhere as quickly as possible or getting me to accomplish a certain number of things as quickly as possible. That God is interested in getting me and being in relationship with me. And, you know, you and I, in the work we do, get to invite others to consider that for themselves, that God just has this desire to be in relationship with us. And, you know, out of that comes great things that we do, but it's not the focus.
Yes, yes. I love the way, just overhearing these words, your sense of Jesus' intuitive passion for the presence of God and his living into that presence, and then your sense of longing to be back in that presence that you were invited in, finding transformation and forgiveness and purpose and meaning and beauty. Even.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if you could say for you what some of those practices or rhythms that you've named your writing is one sort of tangible, practical of how do you do that huge task of finding yourself, letting go of that drivenness and that desire to.
Well, you can come back and you'll keep checking on me, especially as I step into this very busy ministry. of let's see how well I do this balance. And I talk about it in the book that I'm not there yet, but it's what I aspire to. And it's what I strive to live my life toward. For me, it's just being willing to just sit sometimes and not do anything, but just, we have a bird feeder out back, and I love in the morning to just sit and watch the birds and focus on what they're doing. Thich Nhat Hanh is one of my favorite writers, and one of the things that he talks about is mindfulness. And when you're eating, to be mindful of even the food that you're chewing and not be thinking about the next meeting that you have to get to, right? Or if you're having a conversation with someone like you and I are having right now, of not thinking about what am I going to do tonight as I'm, you know, heading out to this next project, but enjoying the moment and being in the moment. So honestly, one of my spiritual disciplines is learning mindfulness, appreciating things that I have right now. And he talks about when you're washing dishes, wash the dishes to wash the dishes. Don't wash the dishes to get them over with to get onto the next project. But the physicality of washing dishes, of any kind of chore or any kind of opportunity becomes mindfulness and that awareness of the gift of the here and now. So, I mean, that sounds really kind of weird. Even as I'm saying it, it just sounds really kind of weird. But for me, it really is not always having to have something to do, but finding opportunities to just simply be. And painting does that for me. Writing is an activity, but it also takes me to a different place. I don't want the church to be my whole life. My ministry assignment to be everything that defines me. So I'm constantly trying to round out who I am by other healthy activities. Mindfulness, painting, writing, bicycling, spending time with my wife. All of those kinds of things are as important as the ministry that I do as a senior pastor of a church. And if I neglect those, then I begin to wobble. You know, I'm a person out of balance.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I love, and I didn't think it was at all. It's fascinating that it's those simple things that we come back to that where we find God in. You mentioned the birds in your backyard, and for me, it's watching my kids and that sparkle in their eye and their forming of those words and phrases that they're trying to put words to this experience of life. And so I think that's an amazing, that mindfulness practice that seems so rooted in the heart of Jesus and the heart of the kingdom of God here and now. I wonder what you've been in a fascinating position for the last 4 years and been able to see the Methodist Church, the Church Universal, in a way that most people don't have the opportunity to. And I wonder what you're seeing that brings you hope. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing that you will bring to St. Andrew that makes your heart sing.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been flying at like 30,000 feet above sea level as I've worked across the country. What gives me the greatest amount of hope is the innovation and creativity, and going back to this meandering sense that I'm sensing, especially among young clergy, who, number one, are not content to do institutional organized church the way it's always been done. They're not happy. Some are, and I worry about them. But I think the ones that I'm most drawn to are the ones who are saying, how does this need to be now, right, for this current culture, to serve this present age, right? John Wesley said, a calling to fulfill. What does it mean to reach out to folks in our current culture who are just not attracted to church? And even when they come, are mystified in some of the wrong senses about it. And find this disconnect. It's almost like stepping into a time machine that attempts to whisk them back to the 1950s. People don't want to go back to the 1950s, you know? So I think I'm seeing more of a movement, a sense of church being a movement, church being outside of walls, church being more of a wider sense of community, less about church being defined as a worship service, or church being defined as a building, or church being defined as, achieving a certain set of wonderful goals, and more of, instead of coming to church, I want to learn how to be church. So no matter where I am, church is. And I think younger folks embrace that more readily than some older folks who are in the church, who understand church to be sitting in worship, being in Sunday school, you know, going to meetings, that's church. It isn't. It's a vehicle through which God can be at work. But being out there and having conversations with neighbors and practicing the disciplines of Jesus in terms of the caring for those who are thirsty and who need clothing and finding ways to meet physical needs. That's what I'm seeing. And the new churches that are being started around the country have more of that sense. They're more inclusive. They're radically inclusive. They're dropping everything that would hinder somebody from coming to church. They're less focused on the music style and more focused on what does it mean to do community together? What does it mean to be real, to have honest conversations, to learn together rather than have somebody who's necessarily going to tell us what to believe or how to live? How do we learn together what it means to be people of faith?
Yes.
And I think the greatest expressions of church have yet to be determined. And we're going to miss them if we keep looking at church the way we always have.
Wow.
That's going to be a challenge for you and I as we continue to serve in an existing large membership congregation that has a heart for mission and outreach. Folks who I think are really striving to be disciples and followers of Jesus and do it in their daily lives. But if we're not careful, there's a lot of things that can distract us. You know, the institutional things of the church can distract us from what it means to be people who express the church in their daily lives, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if you're familiar. You made me think of Phyllis Tickle's work.
And the Great Emergence. I love her stuff.
Yes. That we are in a period of Christianity, of transformation and change like no other period, like a period equatable to the first century or to the Reformation. What is your sense of
her
thesis there?
Yeah. She talks about, I think, every 500 years, the church has a yard sale. I love that metaphor. You know, everything comes out of the garage in the house and goes in the front yard to be sold because new things are coming or new expressions are opening up. And I think she's exactly right. And we're in those cycles right now. And I still believe that there is a place for the existing church in this movement because I think churches like St. Andrew and other churches... We were part of a very effective church in Nashville, Tennessee that only had maybe 120 people on Sunday morning that was as close to what I would consider to be a real church community as anything I've ever experienced.
Wow.
Because everything they do and everything they are is poured out into the community around them. And it's not about the church. It's about the people around them that are also embraced as God's children, you know? So, you know, I think that what I like about Phyllis is we're in the midst of that. We can either resist it and hold our ground and develop a fortress and bunker mentality, right? And some people will break through the walls to join us.
Right.
Or, you know, we can be part of this new thing that is emerging all around us. And it's going to take a lot of trial and error. It's like a laboratory. We're going to try new things. We're going to fail. We got to be okay with failing.
Yes, that's right.
You know, we got to be okay with risk-taking. We've got to say, you know, we've got to find a new way of doing this. And we're going to have to let go of some things that have been very important to us in order to embrace this new thing that is emerging around us and to meet people where they are.
Yeah, it's exciting.
It's
a time of innovation and change and at the same time, a renewal of all that has been meaningful in the Christian tradition for thousands of years.
There's a phrase that I learned, it's a physics term called parabolic harmonious oscillation. Have you ever heard it?
No. Say that again?
Parabolic harmonious oscillation. It makes me sound bright whenever I say it. It's the smartest thing I know, Dale. What I like about it is the movement of a swing. And if you go out and sit on a swing set, you have to do two things at the same time in order for a swing to move. You know what they are?
You have to... lean
back. It's been a while since you've been on a swing.
Yeah, right.
You have to lean.
I'm pushing kids in swings right now.
Well, think of, yes, that's right. So it changes it a little bit. But if you were sitting on a stationary swing and you held hold of the chains on either side of the swing, you lean back, and while you're leaning back, you're kicking your feet forward. And it's both of those movements. That's parabolic harmonious oscillation. Enable the swing to move.
Wow.
What I love about it, get this, what I love about it is, we lean back in the traditions, right? The faith traditions of our community, because they're wonderful, good things that have been passed on to us. And at the same time, we kick forward in new and innovative ways. And it takes both of those. I've seen people try to swing by just kicking their feet forward in new church development work, and it's devoid of any kind of, it's not centered, it's not orthodox in the right kind of ways, it's detached from anything, intentionally. It's like, well, we want to leave all of it behind. And I think it's sad, because our roots and our heritage become very important to us. But so is traditionalism dangerous, where all we want to do is hold on to the past and not kick forward in new and innovative ways. And both of those have to be in a dynamic tension in order for the project of this community of faith to move forward. And we get to figure out how to do that together.
That's exciting.
Which is exciting. And the work that you're doing at Wildflowers is exactly that.
Yeah, thank you.
Of helping people to lean back into the traditions, the healthy, right traditions of the Christian faith, and to kick forward in new and innovative ways, in experiential ways. That's what the future looks like.
Mm, that's really neat. That's really neat. I was going to ask you, what those are exciting ideas to keep thinking about. What for you will your first couple of months look like at St. Andrew? What will be your some of your meandering goals to start?
I am by nature a kicker. I'd be on the swing just kicking my feet. I'm going to confess that, right? I am a doer. I've planted two churches. I just know how to dive into things and get stuff done. I love innovation, creativity, and new things. What I need to do in these first few months is lean back. Okay, that's the first thing I need to do on the swing. And for me, it's to understand the culture and the customs of this, of the beautiful culture and customs of this community of faith called St. Andrew, because there are many, many, many wonderful things. I want to hear the story. I want to immerse myself in it. And it's from that I want to be able to lead the church in kicking out from that posture in new and innovative ways. But if I step into this church only kicking, well, there are going to be a lot of bruises. And most of those will be mine when people kick me out. So, you know, I'm trying to keep in my mind parabolic harmonious oscillation, even in terms of the way I take my first steps as the senior pastor of this church. So I'm going to do a lot of listening posts the first couple of months, every night, one or two small groups or large group sessions where I can do appreciative inquiry and ask people some pointed questions about who they are and what they've experienced and where they sense God is. And I just want to mine all of that gold and then carry it to the leadership of the church to say, this is what I've heard. How do we take all this and begin to move forward together? And that's that. Leaning back and kicking forward.
That's outstanding. I can't wait. It's happening soon. When does this happen?
Gosh, October 15th will be my official start date.
And then your first sermon to us will be?
October 21st, right? October 21st.
That's right.
And then Sunday follows Sunday follows Sunday follows Sunday.
And then we're in it.
Then we're in it, you know, and we get to jump in together as team. With the other staff that we have in the church, with Cindy and the lay leaders of this congregation, who I just marvel at. The people that I'm meeting here are dedicated, phenomenal, gifted individuals.
Just amazing people.
Unbelievable. More so than any place I've been. And the resources that God has poured into this church are exceptional.
Yes.
And on the one hand, I'm extremely proud of that. But more important than that, I understand the sense of responsibility that we all have. Right?
That's right.
I mean,
absolutely.
We could say, look at us, look how great we are. Or we can say, wow, look what's been placed in our hands. What are we going to do about it?
Like the church you were attending, pouring it back out
exactly.
To the community.
Yeah, because every resource God has poured into us is intended, I think, to be used to move this movement forward, to bring the good news to places that it doesn't exist right now or hasn't been heard.
That's exciting. We, as a community, are just so excited to have you as our senior pastor, October 15th and then the 21st.
Yeah.
We look forward to this.
Thanks, Dale. Me too.
You're welcome.
It's going to be great.
Thank you, Gary.
Absolutely.